A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
His brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in Hysteria Nation to the podcast that finds Yetis so nice, we decided to do them twice. This is Hysteria 51.
Do I look abominable to you? Hey, why can't they call me the adorable snowman or the agreeable snowman for crying out loud? I'm a nice guy.
Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago, we are your hosts and lead explorers. I'm John Goforth, and this is Brent Hand.
Are we the lead explorers, though, John?
Cheese muffins.
Shut up, Kyle. Anyway, as I was saying, we do have a bona fide explorer with us today. But before we get to that, let's recap last week. So we're talking...
Hey, idiot. I have the recap ready. No one wants to listen to you blather on about how you blathered on.
That other voice you're hearing, like an automated loudspeaker with an attitude problem, is the one and only Conspiracy Bot. Brent built C-Bot to produce and edit the show in his lab, but he mostly fails at that endeavor extravagantly.
Understatement.
He fails extravagantly.
Yes. Yeah.
It sounds, though, like he actually put some work in this week.
Yeah, so C-Bot, you actually follow the production schedule I posted on your door?
No, not at all. But I did black out last night after a little too much bot booze and bot juice. Bot. 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 When I woke up, it was finished. So there you go.
I'm sure this is just going to be great work. Okay. All right, let's give it a listen. Here it is, dear friends. C-Bot's recap of last week's Yeti episode, part one.
Previously, on Hysteria 51.
All true? Question mark?
Then I'll laugh at you.
Eliminating.
Sucker.
Tree Fitty.
Harry.
That was not the most interesting thing he did that week.
It's Henry Rowan Gardner, kids.
Harry. Moon Nazis nuke, and then we nuke back or something.
Well, they got helium 3 up there.
People that do climbing shit largely for rich white guys that want to climb up the mountain.
Harry. And hilarity ensues.
Yetis don't breach the surface while hunting.
Why am I just human noise? That's the most important part.
And you see enough dead bodies.
Okay, I'm not taking my pants off. Harry.
Take a yak over, shoot it, carve out a hide, and there you go.
And now, Yeti part two.
You know, if nothing, Conspiracy Bot, you're consistent. I'll give you that. You're consistent.
It's so very, very, very true. Kyle, did you do your assignment?
I did. What's an assignment?
I should have seen that coming. I really should have. Brent, let's just get to the guests.
Cheese muffins.
Two guests.
We have returning guests.
Yeah, two in a row.
Two
for two.
Willing to come back for a second week in the lower fourth.
We're happy to see Eric again. Eric, thank you so much for de-summiting and spending your weekend.
That's Eric Severinghouse, our resident Nepal Everest, somebody in Everest expert.
Would that be a Nepalesian?
I'm sure that's right.
Nepalation.
I like to describe.
I believe it's called a nep slip.
I was going to say I like to describe my last podcast as my acclimatization podcast. This is when we're going for the summit. So now I'm ready, guys.
Mm-hmm. And
we made sure that he didn't forget his water bottle and he filled all his oxygen tanks.
Exactly.
We did that for him. We also brought back
Pecker.
His name is Pecker.
And I think that's enough.
Against better judgment?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we didn't tell him he could come back, but yeah. Eric hired him as a
Well, he's my ride. I didn't actually know how to find this place without getting a ride from
it's
Joe.
It's pronounced Sherpa. He's your Sherpa.
You don't think a guy who has somebody carry all his shit up Everest is going to drive out here himself?
Yeah, I know. He also had to carry my beer upstairs. I'm not going to do that.
What do you mean you don't have valet?
Exactly.
Now, it was challenging tracking down some crampons in downtown Chicago. But.
Yeah.
And Brent, now there's a hole in your floor.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, Nation, we are back and we are still talking Yeti. Last episode, we gave you a little bit of the history, and we also certainly went into what it's like to be on Everest and to be in the Himalayas.
Yeah.
With some firsthand experience from Joe, of course.
Yes, exactly.
And then also
Well, he remote viewed it for us.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And then maybe a little bit from Eric. So if you haven't listened to that episode, pause. Come back to this episode, but first, go back and listen to last week's episode.
Yeah, and we ended last week talking just a little bit about where that term came from, abominable snowman. But the thing is that was a new term here. Now, it's almost 100 years ago. That was new to us, but it was nothing new to the indigenous people. That was nothing.
Right, the term might be new, but the creature was not.
So Yeti was actually part of the pre-Buddhist beliefs, and pre-Buddhist is saying something, of several Himalayan people. So I don't know if this is the proper pronunciation, but I believe so. The Lepcha people worshipped a glacier being, which we talked about last episode, as the god of the hunt.
Was that the guy in Primal Rage?
Yeti?
Glacier.
Oh, no, the glacier, yeah. Was that Primal? No. That was...
Oh, Killer Instinct.
Combo Breaker. Ultra Combo.
So in other words, that character is actually a Himalayan god.
Well, it's like a Yeti and Iceman from the X-Men had a baby, and then you killed that baby.
Iceman, I just learned, was an Omega level
mutant.
That's
not new. That's old.
I just learned.
Yeah. He's Omega
level.
Okay,
guys, quit being elitists. I'm just saying I learned it.
Aww. I am elitist. You already knew that.
So followers of the bone religion, bone.
Would you like to ride the bone train?
That's exactly right.
They worship Bone Scott, the lead singer of ACDC.
Yes, Bone. Oh, yeah. They once believed the blood of the wild man had use in certain mystical ceremonies, and that means they had to get it somehow.
And so you were saying the wild man, quote unquote, was their way of referring to the glacial being or Yeti.
And when they would draw him, they would depict him as a giant ape-like creature.
Aha!
Not a bear. Now we're going to get into some bear here in a little bit. How about
that's
those
the bar
footprints?
You're going to later.
In 1899, in Loris Waddell's book Among the Himalayas, Waddell reported his guide's depiction of a large ape-like creature that left the prints, which Waddell thought he just like, those are just bear prints. That's what he said they were. And Waddell heard stories of a bipedal ape-like creature, but wrote that none of the many Tibetans I have interrogated on this subject could ever give me an authentic case. On the most superficial investigation, it always resolved into something that somebody heard tell of, meaning they were all not first-hand accounts, but hand-me-down stories. Now, that's an important part. That kind of brings up, why is it in so many of these cryptid stories, there's no real, a lot of them aren't first-hand part. It's folklore. You know, you hear about it, and a lot of people haven't seen it. We're talking about a Yeti. We talk about Bigfoot. We talk about all these cryptids. I've never seen them. Why do you think that is? Like, what keeps them going?
To some extent, the idea of a humanoid savage that hasn't been sort of civilized, right? Mm-hmm. And sort of brought into the mainstream of all the bullshit that we have to do in our lives. Like, I think that speaks to a number of people. This idea that there actually is some kind of a savage out there that can live free and roam and do what they want to do. It kind of speaks to a part of our psyche.
Yeah.
That's been eroded away over generations.
That's true. And you know, you got an area like that where it's just spoken word from generation to generation. But then time goes by, the world becomes much more traversed. It becomes so much smaller. And so to speak, smaller, we hear those tales, and those are the things that people want to come back. You know, you would go 100, 200 years ago to those places, and you hear about that. Those are the tales that people brought back with them. Oh, they tell the tale of a giant ape creature, the glacial man, the wild man, the Yeti, the abominable snowman.
And well, the other thing is you asked the question, why would these all be recountings of stories?
Right.
Because they're not real stories.
Well, I do believe that there's a lot of that, but I also do believe a lot of things, people see things. And even
right,
if
but then it turns into the game of telephone.
Right, exactly. Or you see something, and we've all done this.
You see something, say something.
If you see something and you catch it out of the corner of your eye, or you see something, your brain fills in the empty spaces.
Well, and at altitude, with a lack of oxygen, hypoxia, I've personally experienced hallucinations. Most people that have been at high altitude have experienced some amount of hallucinations. Mm. So the idea that you're up there, you're in a strange place, your mind is very much sort of looking out for any sort of dangers that might come, right? And quickly hallucinating those sorts of things, I think is very much of a thing. And so it starts to explain it a little bit, but it explains why a guy like me might see something like that up there, right? It doesn't necessarily explain why somebody who lives up there, people who this is what their physiology is adapted to, why they are so consistently seeing these
things. I have an off question about that. If someone who's from there comes to sea level, do they get oxygen sickness of some sort? Does it affect them?
It's insanely rare. So it's not like diving, because people ask me, like, okay, you have to be very careful going up.
Somehow,
right.
Yeah.
Can you get the bends coming down? It's not like that. However, there have been documented cases of Sherpa who live at high altitudes actually getting coagulation of the blood when they get down to sea level.
It is very, very rare,
but it has been documented.
But that's an important thing, like you said, John, though, you know, like a lot of people will make up a story. We see that in a lot of cases with UFO, with the things we talk about. But then the counterpart of that is misidentification or hallucinization. And those are two very different things. When you hallucinate, you might not be seeing anything, but you're seeing something that's there. Misidentification is, and I think that's important, like your brain kind of fills in that you ever think, oh, I saw someone in my corner. No, that's just the pile of clothes
that I left
on the
chair. Just the glowing alien mask.
That's all it is. That's all it was.
Well, that's the thing. So if you're a little further away and you see a bear up on two legs, mistake it for a Yeti, that's one thing. But then there's another, like one of the reports, we'll get into the reports later. One of the reports was, a recounting of somebody else's tale, but from like the 1940s, and a tremendous amount of detail, a long coat of hair with an undercoat of hair, this particular color, just a tremendous amount of detail. And the report ends with, we were about a quarter mile above in elevation, and they looked like black specks. wait a second. Those two things don't gel. If you were that far away and they looked like specks.
Obviously, you don't know what binoculars are, John.
But that is true, though.
Like, things don't mesh when you start digging into. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
But I was just going to say the flip side of this is 100 years ago, people would have said the same things if you were positing that there were multiple different species of humans or humanoid creatures, right? Denisovans and a variety of other ones that inhabited the Earth simultaneously.
And well, it wasn't even 100 years ago when we thought that we wiped them out, a lot of the different species. And then as we're doing DNA testing, we're like, no, we interbred with a lot of different, at least like Neanderthal, like, you know, the average person has upwards of 2% of Neanderthal DNA in them.
Right. But it's not just that. It's that if you went back, you know, even the textbooks that I was looking at as I was growing up, right? You have this linear view of evolution. There were apes evolved into humans, right? And there's this sort of like linear thing when in reality, there are all these different branches. And we know that there are orphan branches that no longer survive to this day.
And we also know that they found like jawbones and things of ones that we haven't even figured out
exactly.
yet.
Exactly. And so you go back a couple hundred years and you say, oh, well, there were these small creatures and then there were these other types of creatures and people go, no, that's BS, hobbits, elves, all this kind of stuff, right? And then you actually find these caves in remote islands and you say, actually, there was a different branch of humanity that we can actually classify, kingdom, phylum, genus, all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah, we have pygmy people now. Like, well, who's to say that we didn't have some form of that even differently that we haven't found?
Vulcans.
True.
Vulcans.
True.
Thank you.
You can tell by the ear bones.
Yes.
The ear bones.
Well, I don't think they're going to visit us. What was the year in Star Trek First Contact?
Within 100 years from now, right?
Yeah, something like that. It's not until we hit warp speed. Then they come. Yeah. Say hi.
I wouldn't worry about it. They'll be here.
It's fine.
And the brother of the guy on Succession is the one who discovers warp drive.
But unfortunately, he uses it for evil, and he sells it to the... What were the
Cyberyetics?
Yeah, Cyberyetics. Yeah. Not to be Weyland-Yutani ends up buying Cyberyetics out, but, you know, it's
It's all right there.
Yeah. On that note, Nation, let's go to break. But when we come back, we are going to talk about some popular sightings, and we're also going to hear from Eric what exactly he did see, whether it was evidence or an actual Yeti.
I bet it was a piece of a Yeti.
That's all next on Hysteria 51.
Much like Rasputin, they just have a penis in a jar. That's a Yeti penis. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation, too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And, you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know. If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long-term, and it's something that it works, you know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this, and this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get now. Started. For a very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
So my only hope is when Eric talks about what he saw, he doesn't tell us what he saw when he opened texts from John Gopher.
Uh-oh, I didn't mean to send that to
Those
you.
Those were private?
It did look like a Yeti.
Yeah. Eric's right next to my wife, Stacy, in my phone. It's the damnedest thing. I don't know.
You know, this thing was so huge, it was, you know... Bigger than a Walmart.
Which is true, because he's the only person you know who uses the mirror for ass selfies.
I don't even know what's happening right now. Nation, we are back, and here's a little story for you. We mentioned we're gonna talk through some Yeti sightings and whatever happened to Eric when he was over there. Another famous individual, Jimmy Stewart, had a Yeti an encounter.
Well, that's a goddamn Yeti.
Money's in his house.
he was vacationing in Calcutta, I think, and got taken
taken in by some
raconteurs, let's say, and they convinced him that this finger was a Yeti finger, and he was all in. He smuggled it back into the U.S. This is no joke. How
did he smuggle the finger?
There's a famous movie about a suitcase? Watch. Just watch that.
Prison wallet.
In his suitcase. Anyway, he gets back to the States and dies thinking he owned a Yeti finger. Then in like 2011, somewhere around then, they did a DNA analysis of the Jimmy Stewart
and
Yeti
finger.
And it was
his finger all along.
I have the power in me.
The finger is coming from in your body. No, it was in fact a human finger. He bought and smuggled a human finger.
Yeti is a wild human.
But it was from Andre the Giant, so it looked the part, you know.
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, if Yeti is a wild man, the DNA was just close enough, yeah. Listen to me being so dismissive of Jimmy Stewart's Yeti finger.
Wow. Yeah.
Also, that might have been the CIA
the cover
intercepting
up.
Right, the
that's
DNA.
Just a human finger.
Human.
Why did you
pay no attention to the giant claw on the end of it, right. Or the third knuckle?
Right, totally human.
Hey Ted, we're gonna need you to cut your finger off. We're doing this whole Jimmy Stewart finger thing. You just need some DNA, right? Can we just prick my finger? Nope, you're gonna have to cut it off.
You just take a couple hairs.
Why are you putting nail polish on it? So that's probably one of the more famous ones. We're gonna do a bunch of them. We're not gonna spend a ton of time on these. We're kind of fast paced.
Thank God.
In 1925, N.A. Tambazi, you know that's an awesome guy, a photographer and a member of the Royal Geographical Society, saw a creature.
How do you become members of these societies? Because they all really do exist.
No, they absolutely do.
It's shocking they haven't invited you, Joe.
When we had
what
on,
the
man, when we the had
contributions I've made to science.
We had David Childress. He was talking about when I was in the Explorers Club and this and that. The other, yeah. I'm like, man, you just have a crazy life, and you're in all these groups. But yeah. So he said he saw a creature at about 15,000 feet near the Zemu Glacier, and he later wrote that he observed the creature from about 200 to 300 yards for about a minute. So again, like you're saying, that's two to three football fields away. That's a pretty good distance.
Oh, yeah.
Unquestionably, this is a quote, unquestionably, the figure...
What, Joe, are you like thinking Canadian football?
I was thinking
football?
This. Are you doing the math on this? 200 to 300 Yeah, I guess that is about 2 to 3 football fields.
I'll just move along.
I don't know, meters, feet.
It's all the same.
So here's his quote, though. Unquestionably, the figure
obviously,
in outline...
football in Brazil.
In outline was exactly like a human being, walking upright and stopping occasionally to pull at some dwarf rhododendron bushes. It showed up dark against the snow, and as far as I could make out, wore no clothes. So it looked like a human with no clothes on. About 2 hours later, Tambazi and his companions descended the mountain and saw the creature's prints described as similar in shape to those of a man, but only 6 to 7 inches by 4 inches wide. He said the prints were undoubtedly those of a biped. So that is actually small.
Yeah, well... The problem with this sighting...
It's a baby, and you don't see baby Yeti often.
That's true. That's true. Mm. Thank you. The problem with this sighting is that they did find out what he saw. They went back on an expedition a year later, and those Yetis were still standing there because they were large rocks.
Ha, 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 ha.
Everyone knows rock footprints are six inches by four.
Yeah, I didn't know they were so much. They made such long
And
footprints.
It's funny. He came out and admitted it later. Like, yeah. It wasn't a hoax. He really thought he saw a Yeti.
No, absolutely. And this is one that it's famous because he goes, oh,
Right. Yeah. He said, yep. But that doesn't change the fact that I saw the prints, and that doesn't change the fact that I believe it exists. But you're right. Those were rocks.
So then Peter Byrne reported finding Yeti footprints in 1948 in northern Sikkim, India, near the same glacier while on holiday from a Royal Air Force assignment in India.
Calcutta.
Now it's funny. Sure. India actually comes into play because they're the ones who say they have found tons of footprints from them. And that's, they like literally go on record as like, nope, it exists and we have tons of photos of footprints.
I watched a 15-minute segment from India News Today or something like that on it. And as the guy was talking, they were using the same three or four stock photos, just rotating in order.
Yeah. Of a bus with like 93 people hanging on the outside of it. That kind of stock photo.
I meant at all.
Did it say Getty Images at the bottom?
Yeah. Yes, it did.
Then in 1951, Eric Shipton took photographs of a number of large footprints in the snow at about 20,000 feet. Now, that's getting up there, right? That's high.
Yeah, there's nothing living at 20,000 feet, by the way.
That should be leaving a barefoot footprint.
No, there is nothing. I mean, there's no dogs up there. There's no wolves. 20,000 feet. You are way above what anything other than birds are hanging out.
Right.
There's no plants.
Mothmen, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, only if something bad's about to happen.
Oh, that's true.
Now, here's the thing. These pictures are famous, and they have been heavily studied and debated, and people have tried to debunk them. And they are either the best evidence of Yeti's existence, because there are a ton of them. And like you said, there should be nothing up there. Or are of a mundane creature like a bear that just kind of got out of its area, and that it could have been distorted by melting snow. And then they say that when you have a bear footprint and then winds blow and the temperatures change, it will elongate and look like a human footprint, but massive. And they claim a lot of these things that you see are just misidentification. But also it's like one of those things you say, well, what the hell were they doing?
Well, and that's one of the biggest problems with using footprints for Yetis, because it is in snow. It's not, you know, you find footprints from 10,000 years ago in North America because like a peat bog like captures it and it doesn't change. But snow is a horrible medium to look at a footprint in, because it changes and melts and everything you just said, Brent.
And it moves around too. Like, depending on your gait, depending on how you slide your foot, if you're shuffling, things like that, you know.
Every day I'm shuffling.
You got the guy that was in New Jersey or whatever, like for like 40 years, he would put on the giant penguin
on
boots.
The beach.
And they thought a giant like 15-foot penguin was there. And then finally he's like, no, it's me. Here's the photos of me doing it for like 40 fucking years. You know, now I don't think someone's up there like with oxygen tanks. I'm going to get him.
But I think this gets to the question, right? Is I agree with you, John, in that snow is not a great medium for preservation of things, right? By definition. But the flip side of this is, what the hell is leaving the prints at 20,000 feet?
Right.
That's what there's not a credible explanation for. There's not a dude running around doing it.
And they're up there higher than that, too, by a few thousand feet, like 24,000, right. Whatever. You know, they found them everywhere.
I mean, keep in mind, a jumbo jet is flying at 35,000 feet intercontinentally, right? You're talking 20,000 feet. There is a small percentage of the oxygen at sea level. Like, there's a limited number of things that physiologically can exist to leave those prints. And there's a much smaller subset of those things that actually like voluntarily goes to that. Like, human beings are about the only species dumb enough to spend time at 20,000 feet.
He knows he went.
Right. I can say this authoritatively. There ain't anything else up there.
And
we had a dog get into base camp at one point. We're like, holy, now this is at 17.5. Holy shit, a dog. Like, we were all like, oh my God, there's a dog here. This is awesome. Dogs will occasionally get off the trail and like up into base camp because there's some food there. There's people, that kind of thing. But like, you get up to 20,000 feet, like, there's not things there.
Even, yeah, when the dog's like, bro, don't do that. You're like,
Well, I think that's the most intriguing part of the Yeti phenomena to me. And Joe, you and I have actually talked about this a lot with a lot of different cryptids. It isn't what monster lurks that we're on, you know, that there's actually, there be monsters. It's much more what sort of different species that we are unaware of currently is
Or even subspecies
is running around. Yeah.
It's, it's, it,
it's some variation, most likely, of a bear or an ape of some kind.
And we've talked about this before, too. Like, even we even talked about Bigfoot and things like that. It's much more feasible for me to believe you could have something that's not been found up there than in, like, the woods around here, because there are a lot less people up there. And the people that are up there are going, yeah, we know about it. It's real. You know what I mean? Where the people here, well, they're still saying the same thing about Bigfoot, but in a different way. Getting back on with a couple more important sightings. On March 19th in 1954, the Daily Mail printed an article which described expedition teams obtaining hair specimens, which were supposed to be from a Yeti scalp. Now, it's in a monastery.
In Pangboche?
You have been there.
I have indeed. He visited this Yeti scalp and have photographic evidence.
So we're going to post those photos, and these photos won't just be from off. These are photos that Eric actually took.
I have a much more important question than Yeti scalp related. Is this the same Daily Mail that posts all that fake news right today? Because it said 1954.
I don't know. Is it changed?
That's a great question.
I have no idea.
Mm.
Nation, weigh in.
Yeah. So hairs were black to dark brown in color in dim light and fox red, they say, when you shine them in the direct sunlight. And they took them for analysis. The hair was analyzed.
So they were fox red that you just couldn't see very well in dark light.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the damnedest thing. You can see them a lot better outside. but I guess it's dim where they're at, so it
looks
black.
They had a greenish hue and green light. It was amazing.
It was bizarre.
So the hair was analyzed by Professor Frederick Wood Jones, and he's an expert in human and comparative anatomy. During the study, he said the hairs were bleached, cut into sections, and analyzed microscopically, like so they could get in and really figure out what's going on. He said the research consisted of taking micro photographs of the hairs and comparing them with hairs from known animals such as bears, orangutans, things that they thought could have been misidentified for what a Yeti could be. And Jones concluded that the hairs were not actually from a scalp, but he thought they were from the back, like a ridge of an animal, what they call the back plate. No animals have a ridge on their scalp, like where they, if this was a real scalp, this would be the only animal that has like a ridge like that.
Like a Klingon?
Exactly.
Ayo.
And so he was unable to pinpoint exactly the animal which was from, but he's convinced the hairs were not of a bear. They're not of any ape or anything, but of a coarse-haired hoofed animal in the area. It could be like a yak or something like that.
Centaur.
Yeah, exactly. Minotaur, because they actually got that from in the center of the labyrinth. So.
But they didn't actually do the DNA testing. This is just looking at it a microscope.
Looking at it at the time, because it's at the time that's what they could do, and it looked just like yak hair.
It was a different time.
It was.
Yeah, it was the kind of time when
it was the roaring
50s. It's abominable.
So this particular scalp, you said you saw.
It's famous.
When you went and saw Pangboche?
Pangboche.
Pangboche.
Yes.
Were there people there talking about it? Was there stuff to read? What was the experience like?
Yeah, there is stuff to read. I actually sent, we will post it on the Hysteria Nation Facebook page. But yeah, I have some pictures of some of the stuff that's there. It's very much in the center of this monastery, and it's a beautiful Buddhist monastery. People go in there and pray. It's a very sacred place. And there is a Yeti scalp sitting in a box that says Yeti scalp right in the middle of this monastery. And apparently
they don't really bury the lead on that thing.
Yeah, man. No, it's pretty clear what it is. Like there's not a whole lot of question about it. They apparently take it out of the box for religious ceremonies. And so,
rub the scalp.
And so it's not tongue in cheek at all. They're like, this is a Yeti scalp. Duh.
Yeah. But again, it's when we say it over here. It would be like, you know, churches here that have sort of divine artifacts, and you're like, oh yeah, sure, I'm sure that's like from the time when this guy rose from the dead.
Yeah, this is the cup of Christ. Like, yeah, oh yeah, I'm sure Jesus actually died.
It's like the Shroud of Turin being in a box.
Yeah, but when you're in a church and you're like, oh okay, like this is the thing that they say that it is. It's very much that way. Like, it's not tongue in cheek. It's not weird. It's not. It's just like, yes, this is the scalp of a Yeti. We know that there are Yetis out there in and around the area, and this is one of the scalps. You know, it's a rare artifact, so it's a special thing.
And we're down to this because we already gave away the finger, you know. So.
He chose
Jimmy Stewart.
Poorly.
And unfortunately, half of our Himalayan rock salt lamps are in Brent Hand's house.
Yep, I do have one of those. I didn't know that those things melted, but it's like I've got like salt all over up there.
Well, you keep licking it.
How else am I supposed to get salt intake? At least it took away my salt block.
Plants need electrolytes.
Yeah.
Brent needs electrolytes.
Yeah.
It's got what plants need.
So the next one, John, why don't you say the name of the guy who wrote the book, The Long Walk? That is exactly how his name is spelled.
All right, so here we go. Stawomir Rawitz.
There is a letter in there that none of us have ever seen before. So that is as close.
Like an italics T, kind of?
Yeah.
He claimed in his book, The Long Walk, which was also a great short story by Stephen King. Have you read that?
No.
It's about like these. It's in the near future where when you get to a certain age.
Where you have Yeti, to, cyber Yetics have been bonded onto everyone.
When you get to a certain age, you have to participate in this game called The Long Walk, and you just have to keep walking. And walking and walking, and like the last one to drop, or the last one to still be walking and not drop dead wins.
Isn't that an Olympic event already?
Yeah, well, yes. But do they have to power walk with that weird sachet?
Yes, yes, they do. They do.
Where a guy got disqualified for having an unregulated water cup in his hand. It's the only Olympic event possible where you're allowed to carry liquids with you, but just they have to be regulated.
Wow, I didn't know about that.
Yeah. Well, because it had too many electrolytes, which is. You know, it's got jogging a power walker's
perhaps
knee.
Yogging.
Yeah. Yogging. It might be a soft J.
Anywho, check out that short story. It's in one of his anthologies, like the Skeleton something. Anyway.
Which is another good story.
But this is not what we were talking about. We were talking about a book, The Long Walk, published in 1956, and he claims that he and some others were crossing the Himalayas in the winter of 1940, and their path was blocked for hours by two bipedal animals that were doing seemingly nothing but shuffling around in the snow.
So literally, smoke break like the dogmen of Skinwalker Ranch, just like, hey man, we're hanging out here, do you mind? Literally, so Eric, we talked about Skinwalker Ranch a while ago and some weird shit, but literally one of the stories was two dogs bipedal were smoking and chatting on what seemed to be a break, and these guys are like, the family's like, the fuck,
essentially.
Sorry man, I was like, smoke if you got them.
So I feel like what we're talking about here is the
Oh yeah, there is a stray cigarette on the table here, and none of us smoked the. I don't even know. Yeah,
I feel like what we're talking about here is kind of the Yeti version of Jay and Silent Bob, just shuffling back and forth, not really doing anything.
I don't understand when you read that description. That sounds to me like two dudes trying to summit, and like one of them dropped his keys or a contact lens.
I told you not to bring these.
Yeah, why do you even have them up here?
How important would an item have to be? If you dropped it near the summit and then didn't realize it till you got home, for you to go back.
Right. That better be a kidney. How's that happen? Another name we're going to talk about is a name that is famous. I'm sure Eric is very familiar with. I think you brought him up in the last episode. Sir Edmund Hillary. In 1960, he mounted an expedition to collect and analyze physical evidence of the Yeti. And he borrowed the scalp that you've seen.
Nope, this is a different one. This is from the Kumjung.
Oh, though I'm sorry, you're right. Kumjung Monastery. And so there's multiple scalps in multiple monasteries. Right.
By the way, I was reading about this in, I don't know, one of the books I was reading. And
the Daily Mail?
Yes, I was reading about this in the Daily Mail. And he went on this expedition, Edmund Hillary, he was hired by the National Geographic Organization. That just doesn't happen anymore. You don't get, there aren't Indiana Jones types sitting around getting hired to go, you know.
I would totally disagree with that. So when you look at a lot of these.
He's not welcome back.
but many of these explorers, these unbelievable athletes and things like that, they literally are being sponsored by folks like North Face or, you know, Eddie Bauer or whatever to do all kinds of crazy climbs, expeditions, weird stuff.
Look at the weird shit the Red Bull pays for.
Yeah. Like if you're an adventure.
Not just fluke dog.
If you're an adventure athlete, getting somebody to pay you to do weird and interesting shit is like the holy grail of being a professional.
Which is weird
adventurer.
Because I live my life trying to get paid to do weird and interesting shit.
Yeah, I don't know. But are they, is Red Bull paying people to go find Yetis? They might be paying them to, you know, shoot up.
Well,
into
I know
the
that they'll
ionosphere.
Sponsor you to go across the Arctic.
But universities still pay for that and have people all over the world doing.
Name one. Give me one right now. The
University of Colorado.
And they sponsored
like,
who?
No, fuck you on the Yeti. I don't know about that. But
no, there is like But there, like, is one in Germany digging up bone, Yeti research.
Digging up bones, digging up, like, anything. Like, that is still very much anyone that's doing research, they pay for people to go to live in, like, Antarctica and do crazy shit.
I just
shit
don't think that they're hiring people to go find a bunch of cryptozoology type stuff.
It's a different era.
There is a university that is currently looking for, now this is 100% true.
University of Phoenix.
There is a university that is looking to try to prove if the thylacine is, actually, no, that's not.
It's a little different.
It is a little different, but they are paying a lot of money, you know, and they have people on ground that are looking for, the proof if the Tasmanian tiger.
Are you going?
Unfortunately, I didn't pass the background check. Who'd have thought?
But speaking of adventures, Edmund Hillary, he brought the scalp back for testing. After they did the testing, they thought that they compared it to a blue bear and a black bear. And what did they decide, Brent?
Well, the Acero, which is a different kind of animal, blue bear, they concluded it was probably made from the skin of an animal closely resembling the sampled specimen of Acero, but definitely not identical with it. Possibly a local variety or race of the same species, or a different but closely related species. Now, a Acero, if you're not familiar with it, looks kind of like they're a medium-sized goat-like antelope yak-looking, I don't know. Yak's wrong because that's bigger. But a Acero, think of like a mountain goat, but black.
Yeah, it's and delicious. Bigger. Delicious with curry.
Mm-hmm. I like my Acero fried. So.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right,
but it is funny that they're like, it's not exactly your normal Acero, but it seems to be something in that family.
Acero squash.
But, you know, the interesting thing, when we compare Bigfoot to Yeti, Sasquatch to Yeti, and this might just be due to the region, I don't know, there's so many less sightings of Yeti and much more anecdotal evidence.
And footprints. And,
yeah, footprints
not that
and
there
hairs.
Is a ton
and,
of, but at least you get, like, in Bigfoot, like you're talking about, tree knocks and calls and noises and footprints that we have plaster
first-hand
casts,
witness explanations. Right,
a rock thrown at me.
So, Eric, let's talk a little bit about your time there as it relates to Yeti. Did you? I know that for the most part, people aren't just running around talking about Yetis all day. But did you have any conversations with locals? Any experiences? Anything as it relates to Yeti other than seeing the scalp?
Well, there are pictures of footprints in the tea houses. And I've shared some of these with Brent as well. So I think we're going to put some of these things up. Again, there are pictures of footprints. There are scalps. There's sort of this pervasive culture of this evidence of what they claim to be. You know, are artifacts that have come from the Yeti.
Does it seem to be important to them that people believe Yeti is a thing?
Not really. Any more than, like, it's again, it's part of the religion, right? And so it's not it's in the same way that if you're talking to somebody about, like, is it important for me to make you believe that my religion is true? Like, for all intents and purposes, like, there are a few people for whom there, you know, there's the evangelical strain, right? I didn't see any, like, evangelical Yeti believers who are like, oh, yes, you must believe that we have seen the Yeti. It's just more of a, like, yeah, these things are there. They exist. Like, we have their scalp. We have their footprints. We have pictures of things that could be not, you know, prints of things that could be nothing but a Yeti. And so there's this sort of, like, yeah, we know it's true, and, like, you can believe it or not, man.
But to one extent or another, I mean, they are pushing it, meaning they don't have yak prints, right? Like, so the question is, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at is all of that stuff up for your benefit? Just like people want to know about that stuff, so they're going to put it up, or is it up because they do want to extol the virtues of having Yetis about?
I don't think it's either. So I would pick option C, which is to them.
Didn't offer that one. Sorry.
To them, it's special. And this is a special thing. It's a special being. It's a special creature. It's a special, you know, sort of manifestation of this thing. And so to them, it's special. The evidence of it's special. The proof of it's special. The artifacts that they have that are special. And so they want to show you this thing that they think is special, not necessarily to, like, force you to believe it or to get you to, like I think in the Pangboche Monastery, you can donate money. And so, like, there's a little bit of, like, the tourist trap element to it. But you see these artifacts all through the valley, and it's not in order to, like, extract currency from you. It's just because it's this thing that they think is cool.
The Valley of the Jolly Dark Yeti.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
No, he hasn't.
That makes sense. So, last question. when you were there, even if it's not Yeti related, did you see any kind of cool wildlife, any interesting lights, interesting sounds, interesting things, just something out of the ordinary? Did you experience any of that, or was it pretty much all par for the course?
I didn't necessarily have any like unexplainable things that I saw. Again, it's a spiritual place. It's a different place. When you're up high, there's not a lot of life at all. And so you don't really see a lot. I didn't have anything that would come back and say, oh man, I saw these lights and I have no idea what they were or anything like that. But everything there is just a little bit different. It's just, it's a little bit special. It's a little bit more magic. It's like being in a spiritual land. And so everything just sort of takes on a little bit of a different light to it.
Like Iron Fist. Like, yeah, Iron Fist. Like yeah.
What was this place?
I don't remember.
Yeah. No one does.
A little bit more just etheric, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Let's head to break and let's wrap this up with a bow when we come back. We're going to talk explanations for what it could be, or could it be real, and all that jazz. We're going to wrap it up for you. That's coming up next on Hysteria 51.
Great job.
Explanations.
Who could it be now?
Yeah, who or what or when could this? You know, they talk about with Bigfoot, it's interdimensional. Are these just interdimensional right. travelers? Or they come out and they're like, shit, it's cold. Cheese it. Whoop, 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 and they take off back.
Interdimensional or time travelers? Could they be time travelers? Yetis are us from 3,000 years.
Nope, still cold. We got bigger feet by then and a lot more hair.
There's a. You know how there's that thing that happens in Hollywood where
the casting couch.
You mean the creation of movies?
Oh. Yes, the thing that happens in Hollywood movies. No, where in the same era, a year or two apart, whatever, virtually identical movies come out. You know, people always like to reference, what is it, The Core and Deep Impact?
Deep Impact was the one that was like Armageddon.
There were a couple of volcano movies that came out.
So one just came out called Smallfoot, and it's about a bunch of Yetis discovering man. It's a cartoon, like a, you know, Pixar, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Or what, I don't know what company it is. And then there's another one coming out called Abominable. So it's like a Yeti is having a moment.
Well, and we just had the man who killed Hitler and then the Yeti or whatever.
And then Bigfoot.
And then Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Sam Elliott.
Oh, yeah, Sam Elliott.
Oh, and there was a Bigfoot cartoon that came out. I don't remember the name of it.
Shit, on, man. So. It's time to reboot some Harry and the Hendersons.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Missing Link. Missing Link. It was one of those animated but kind of weird animation. Supposed to be funny for adults and kids. I don't know. I didn't see it.
Never even heard of that one. Well, let's get into explanations other than poorly animated. That's one of them, I guess.
Yeah.
Number one, I think this one has to be thrown out first. Misidentification of known animals. Like, you see something, you know, like we said, it's high up there, but not all of them are that high. You see a bear, you see something, you see a rock even. Now, it doesn't have to be animals. And you think you saw one thing and it is another.
Yeah, not all sightings and not all footprints were at 20,000 feet.
No, not all. And even then, you know, things could be, you know, around there, or it could even be a person in all black. Maybe not all black. Black isn't a bad thing to wear when you're surrounded by white. It's easier to see, you know what I mean? So you might have darker clothes
the
on.
The ninjas from Japan in the Himalaya masquerading as Yetis.
It happens.
See, I think on this one, one of the interesting things is you have three different theories, I guess, that there's a lot of evidence for each. And it's like there's all these stories and traditions that date back a long time, not just in that like Nepal, China, Bhutan corridor, but even going up into like that area of Russia and stuff of wild men, of this like lost, forgotten humanoid species. Then you have stuff of like, is it a bear that accidentally got up kind of high? Maybe. And then it's like, is it some species of gorilla that's not a lowland gorilla and it exists up there? And I think you can look at all of those and it's like, maybe there's a bunch of stuff happening going back to misidentification. And it's not like, again, like John was saying, it's not like one monster.
that's out there like tearing apart tents. It's a bunch of different stuff.
No, that's what
happens randomly.
That's what happened at the Dietloff Pass.
Yes.
Well, speaking of you know, animals, you said like some sort of ape or gorilla. People have even thought that they could be orangutans, but they don't really hang out in that climate right. at all. But that is one of the things that people have tried to explain it away as, oh, well, it's just a, you know, an wandered off orangutan that is in that area or something like that.
I think
because they are from not far away.
I think that was a really good categorization, Joe. It's either misidentification, an unknown animal, whether that be a different species that we haven't discovered yet, or some sort of crossbreed of something. One of the explanations we'll get into here in a minute is that there was this thought for a while that it could be a cross right. between a brown bear and a polar bear that we have yet to discover. Or number three, the paranormal, you mm-hmm. know, a monster, some sort of
reptilians,
sort of non-natural phenomena.
Yeah. An actual Kinnegan. So the other thing, footprints, we've talked about snow melts, it causes things.
That's their word.
We've gotten into that a lot. I don't think snow, as you put, John, is a great identifier of things, unfortunately.
A medium.
That's a really good footprint. Though, stepping into what you guys just said, could there be a hiding present day specimen of unknown or extinct giant ape? Now, the word that they throw around is Gigantopithecus. That is something that people love to talk about. Or some other unknown great ape. Now, Gigantopithecus doesn't check off the proper boxes because it actually was so big that they actually think it was quadrupedal. It couldn't actually stand up on its own.
It's like when they explain everything with the fact that there's just some megalodon running around or swimming around under the sea.
Well, that's a fucking given, dude.
So now that they have the Meg, the movie, yeah. the next one is the Gig.
Yeah. There are a lot of pictures you can find of Gigantopithecus. Now, we don't really know what it looked like because all we have is jaw bones and things. Now, they're fucking massive. You know, molars are gigantic, but we don't know. But they think it would have been so massive that bipedal movement would have not been able to. So then that goes back to it would be some sort of other unknown great ape. But then that goes into the other thing is
or a lot, grape ape.
grape ape. The thing is, a lot of people say that it looks like a bear. So, and then when they take pieces of it, it's a goat yak or something. So, hey, who knows? Science, though, is trying to figure all this out. We're not just laying on our asses. In 2013, a call was put out by scientists from the universities of Oxford and Lucerne for people claiming to have samples from these sorts of creatures. Now, they didn't per se pay for these expeditions, but they were looking into. There's two universities, Jen.
And I believe Lucerne actually, if in their sort of like hall of DNA or hall of animals, they actually have an empty area that they have that they have cordoned off for the Yeti.
Oh,
because they believe it will be identified, and so they are holding room for it.
Wow.
There.
Like my trophy
Eric,
case.
How much DNA have you submitted?
As a 6'5" Arctic creature. in fairness, compared to a Sherpa, I do sort of look like a Yeti.
Yeah, and it's the damnedest thing. It had beautiful blonde hair.
I know.
It's just coiffed.
Also lost on the podcast.
So a mitochondrial DNA analysis
bad
on
mediums.
Samples. From hair from an unidentified animal. This was taken in northern India, west of the Himalayas, and one from Bhutan. These two samples were compared with those in the gene bank. That's where they have every known everything. This gene bank has everything that we know of, the International Repository of Gene Sequences, and it matched a sample from an ancient polar bear jawbone found from dating back to 40,000 to 120,000 years ago.
This is the one I was talking about. So the guy, I'm forgetting the guy's name, the guy that came up with this theory did his analysis, and then he uploaded all the information he used to do his analysis to the mm-hmm. GenBank. A bunch of other scientists took it, ran with it, and they go, yeah, man, hey, listen, we appreciate the effort, but you're wrong. It's just bear. It's just bear. Because what they were thinking was, it's not Yeti, but it's really cool. It's a cross between a brown bear and a polar bear that we heretofore did not exist. And
now we know that that happens, and we've actually had, unfortunately, some have been shot and killed, and things happen like that.
But yeah. but there's not one currently in the Himalayas. And so they did, they thought it was like some other, like, as Joe was mentioning, you know, some other species that like off tick evolutionary that they didn't know about. And it turns out that's not the case. It was just a basic brown bear that the samples had been damaged. That was why.
So it didn't actually match to a 3,000-year-old ancient. So barring hoaxes or anything, bears in the region, it seems like, have been mistaken for Yeti. Now, that's not to say that every sample that they've gotten is not been planted or just, you know, misidentification, things like that. But the ones that have come forward, for the most part, just seem to be, people are seeing bear.
His name was Brian Sykes, and his team's the one who carried out the analysis at Oxford. And he thought that the samples came from the hybrid species we talked about. Mm-hmm. In 2017, the new analysis compared the mitochondrial DNA sequences of bears from the region with the DNA extracted that were claimed to be Yetis, and kind of including the hair that was thought to be from the preserved specimen of Sykes sample, and it showed to have been a Himalayan brown bear. And womp womp.
So here's a quote from Brian. He says, "I'm 90% convinced that there is a bear in this region that is being mistaken for a Yeti."
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
You know,
The cool part is he's a scientist, so he admits when he's wrong.
Then in 2017, Daniel C. Taylor, he published a comprehensive analysis of the century-long Yeti literature, looking at everything that's come. This book gave meticulous explanations for most of the footprints, things like that, the DNA, as well as all the other unexplained Yeti footprints from everywhere, not just the famous Eric Shipton and the Cronin McNeely footprints, which are ones that came in 72.
Those are the ones that when you search for Yeti footprints,
you see them.
That Google image search pops
and
up.
To complete his explanation.
I'm sorry, Bing image search.
After you get through all the coolers.
Taylor also located a never before published photograph in the archives of the Royal Geographical Society taken in 1950 by Eric Shipton that included scratches that are clearly bear nail marks, meaning this was in with those and they just hadn't published that one. And it was most definitely a bear footprint.
Clearly photoshopped.
Well, yeah, because 1950s Photoshop, that was Photoshop 2.0 back
2.0,
then.
2.0, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't as good, but bear was actually one of the brushes. Bear claw. Not to be confused with cheese muffins.
Stop it.
So, kids, it seems like most of these are cases of mistaken identification. I can't say all because we don't know. And like we said, you think in that area, it's still really weird for something to be that high.
That was Joe's band name in college, Mistaken Identification.
Yeah, he played bass for them. Think back to the beginning of the episode when we talked Sasquatch versus Yeti. They said the Yeti more resembled a bear. And then you have the foremost person who's done it goes, yeah, I think it's just a bear. That's a hefty statement.
That was me, by the way.
The foremost expert?
I said that.
Yeah, but that's fair.
Your eyes play tricks on you. You have oxygen, and low oxygen can make you see things. But I'm not saying no because we don't know everything. And for a long time, people have been seeing these. If I had to pick a place and there could be something hidden, that'd probably be one of them.
It is one of the greatest mysteries in the scientific world.
But unfortunately, all the evidence we have points to a no.
So let's go around the table. Let's cap this thing off, guys. What do you think Yetis are? What the evidence, the photos, the first and secondhand reports. What are we actually seeing? Joe, let's start with you.
I think it's all misidentified species that are rationally explained. However, with the caveat, I think it absolutely is unknown versions of species. I think it's either or all of a bear we have no idea exists that's up there all the time and isn't just some wandered off random black bear. I think potentially it's and or some species of ape and or some sort of wild human that time forgot.
So I think something is there that is distinct.
Yeah.
Strong. That's interesting.
Eric.
Yeah, I was actually going to say something very similar to what Joe said in that. I don't necessarily buy that there is somewhere, you know, families of humanoids with long hair that, you know, are 99% us, but hanging out up there.
You have never been to some of the places I've been.
but But the idea, I continue to believe that up in some of these rarely explored, uninhabited by human, rarely visited regions, there are subspecies or variations of species that either exist, or there's a species of bear, something like that, that we weren't expecting to see up there. I'll be shocked if in 10 or 20 years, if we revisit this conversation, if we haven't, you know, later found some sort of an offshoot that we're like, huh, we didn't think that thing was here, or we didn't realize there was this variation that exists.
Well, kind of like we were talking about, John, was talking about the polar bear, brown bear hybrids that now people have, you know, hunt, shot, and killed on accident, yeah, things like that. And then we go, they really do happen. They do exist.
Brent, anything to add from what your thoughts?
Not really.
Before?
I mean, I like I said, they kind of agreed that there could be something up there because this would be the place. But I think 99.9% of everything that we're seeing, or 100% of the proof we have, is misidentification.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. The part I disagree with Joe, I don't think there's a yet to be identified hominid running around. I think that would be just too shocking, and like another Neanderthal or something like that. I think that'd be too shocking, for me.
We ain't found shit.
I think this is
stop hiding Brendan Fraser in yes, your basement.
Yes,
freeze
exactly.
Your
exactly. Here, take a frozen burrito. They're good.
And he was with Yetis in one of those mummy movies.
Oh,
fact.
The third, the oft overlooked third.
Boy, maybe what happened to his career?
He's where in Doom go? Patrol right now.
He's in what?
Doom Patrol.
Yeah, hidden under a mask.
Yeah, he is, but he plays, he's a character in Doom Patrol.
Oh, didn't know.
Which is doing really well. I hear it's good. I haven't watched it.
I've heard good things as well.
The yet to be discovered subspecies makes total sense to me. It's like the giant squid. I mean, we
Eric and I were talking about that before you got here. Yeah.
We knew the giant squid existed. We saw the sucker marks on whales, but
literally that's the conversation we had.
I was listening, remote listening.
John was depositing sucker marks on whales. That's why he was late.
The thing I think will be most interesting is to figure out what it was. Was it some sort of ape that can actually stand the temperatures and the elevation that we're unaware of, or is it some sort of bear? I think it's probably one of the two.
What if it's a ape bear hybrid? No one throws that out.
Then we'll know Cobra did it. it was Cobra, you know,
Cobra Commander.
Yeah, exactly.
Retreat,
Nation. That is what we think, but we want to know what you think. Go to Hysteria Nation. That is our Facebook discussion group. Go to facebook.com, search Hysteria Nation. We're gonna have a lot of discussion about this one. Also, a lot of photos.
Eric's adventures.
Not blurry.
Not blurry. And yeah, if you got questions about, you know, what it's like to risk your life climbing a mountain, because he did that in space.
Ask Brent.
Yes.
The Appalachian Trail was harrowing, I understand.
Oh, I didn't climb it. I hiked it. There's a difference. Only part of it.
Yeah, only part.
Don't
of
lie
it.
To our listeners. I only hiked part of the
part
Appalachian.
Of it, yeah.
Lisa did not think that was as funny as I did when I was doing it. Get a picture, baby. Get a picture. Why? We're 4 foot out of a parking lot. God, take a fucking picture.
I'm hiking the AT.
Yeah. So, yeah, don't forget facebook.com/hysteria51pod. That is our page where you can find this and all our episodes. Patreon.com. You can get a picture of another type of cryptid. That is the Loch Ness Monster. I'll draw it for you. It only costs $3.50. And you can get t-shirts and stickers and pins and posters and all sorts of fun things. Smell till your heart's desire of things that you don't even want to smell. Voicemail 773-669-7277. Again, John, what's that number?
773-669-7277. Leave us a voicemail. We'll play it about 2 years from now.
Yeah, that's right. And if you forget any of that, where can they go?
Hysteria51.com.
Don't forget to tell a friend. We actually had a big growth in the group this week. Like we added several people. I put in there and I said, if you know people, you know, add them to the group. And we had a lot of people, and it's grown and grown and grown. And we're about 3,000 members almost in Hysteria Nation.
The nation is strong.
Yeah, let's keep growing that. Oh, God. That's what it sounds like when people sniff John Goforth. So huge thank you to one of our guests, Eric, this week. Thank you for doing a twofer, doing 2 weeks in a row.
Thanks for inviting me, guys.
Thank you for surviving so that you could come and tell us this.
Well, thanks for keeping me strong while I was on Everest. I appreciate
That's right.
I appreciate the nation.
I'm pretty sure that you don't come back from Everest without this show, so I'd like to thank
us. Certainly did. Yeah. I certainly wouldn't have summited.
This is the time of the show I'd like to thank myself for which, you know, all things are possible.
And Joe. Joe, I'm going to say it. Thank you.
Thank you. You had a great time.
So with that said, I've been Brent.
I've been Joe.
I've been Eric.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.